Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Crystal R., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, July 25th, 2024, and this is 7 a.m. Eastern Time Vision for You Big Book Meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 34, the third paragraph, that begins with, How then shall we help our readers? Reading through that one paragraph ending with, This is the crux of the problem. Today's readers are Joni C. for the 12 steps, Laura M. for the 12 traditions, Joni Y. will be reading the text, Reva P. will read page 164, and Katie G. will be our backup reader. Our newcomer greeter will be Susan S.H., and our second hour host will be Eileen M. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, July 24th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, was 21,600, 21,600, and for the 10 a.m. meeting was 21,601, 21,601. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Joni C. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks so much, Joni C. I will now ask Laura M. to read the 12 traditions.
Hi there. This is Laura M. from Northwest Florida, recovering compulsive eater. These are the 12 traditions. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Laura M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism, on page 34, the third paragraph, which begins with, how then shall we help our reader, and ends with, this is the crux of the problem, and we'll be commenting on that one paragraph. I will now ask Joni Y. to begin the reading.
Good morning. This is Joni Y., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater from Connecticut. Paragraph begins at the very bottom of 34. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcohol sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. Good morning, everyone. The word that really stood out to me in this important paragraph is precede. I remember listening to a podcast years ago when I came back in 2020. Prelapse. They called it prelapse, which is at least with me, I always felt like I just got sideswiped by a relapse. But in fact, there was a lot going on before that point, and I really tried to, with the help of my sponsor, just take a really good look at my behaviors. And this was the first time. I always thought it was just about the food. If somebody just give me give me a plan. You know, I've run 3 marathons. I've done this and that just because I have the plan. Of course, they were all to lose weight and just sent me into worse relapse afterwards. But just I was very determined and strong, and I could do it. It got harder and harder to stick to anything when I finally turned my life over to the spiritual solution, not the non-spiritual solution. And so prelapse, really looking at the, what precedes the relapse into drinking, is so important. And the crux is defined as crux is a great word, defined as the decisive or most important point at issue. And really understanding not necessarily every detail of why am I doing this, why, but really understanding that only the solution only rests in the spiritual solution and in God of our understanding. So thank you for allowing me to do service today, and I look forward to everyone's shares, and I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joni Y., for getting us started. We're now going to open up the meeting for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week on any vision meeting, please allow others the opportunity to share today. Please keep your share to approximately 3 minutes to allow as many people as possible to share. I'll remind you when you're at 3 minutes, so please wrap up your share as best you can. Who would like to share today?
Christina J.
Katie G.
Fran.
From Boston.
Fran V.
Reva P.
Flat E. from the UK.
Nancy C.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Let me let you know who I've heard. I heard Christina J., Katie G., Reva P., I think it was Fran Z., Claire E., and Nancy C. Is there anybody that I missed? Or anybody else who would like to share?
Roz G.
Great. All right. Thanks, everybody. So let's get started with that list. We'll stop there. Here's who I have again: Christina J., Katie G., Reva P., Fran Z., Claire E., Nancy C., and Roz G. Please give us your first name, the initial of your last name, and your location when you share so we can find you on the member list. If I could ask everybody to please press star 1 to mute your line. We'll get started with Christina J., followed by Katie G. Christina J., please press star 1 to unmute.
Good morning, Crystal. Good morning, everyone. Christina J. in North Carolina. Grateful to be here today. Today I'm in recovery, and today I can look back and see that I lived most of my life in an irritable, restless, discontent, jealous, insecure, angry, fearful state. What do you do with that? You know, I had a God, but I wasn't going to God with that. I'd go to God with my pains of my body and thank you for a wonderful life and all this stuff, but I never went to God and fell down to my knees and said, I need help. And yet I claim to have a great spiritual relationship. I went on many, many spiritual journeys, as many of you have heard me talk about on the line. I did many great things with spirituality, but still I came home to the neon lights in town, and I would stop on the way home from the spiritual journeys and in a store and get stuff, and you know. So what is the crux of my problem? I'm not connected, you know. I use food for everything, and the journey with food is a dead end. It leads to nothing. So I don't have a chance in hell if I don't discover in this program, in these steps, 4 through 9 specifically, come in, surrender, realize I have a problem, really realize I have a problem, all the excuses are over, I can't try anything else, and I get to that precious step 4 and I begin to see who I am. My soul begins to be unveiled. First of all, I'm unveiled from the food, and then the soul gets to come up and say, hey, I'm angry about this, I'm resentful about this. And in the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th through 9, we get to clean all that up, and we can walk clean. But we have, you know, it's not just the food. It's not just the substance, as many of you know. And the sooner we can remove that and get on with this program, the sooner we can find recovery and sanity. And today I don't have to live irritable, restless, discontent, in fear, in jealousy, in, you know, all that stuff. I got a program that helps me keep that clean. Without that, I'd still be in the food. I'd still be in all my BS in my soul. So if you're out there and can you lose? So what? You have to find a higher power, you know. Some people that have an aversion to that, just look for something that's positive and loving in your heart. That's all you need to start. You don't have to call it God, whatever name offends you. You know, it's okay. It's okay. We all understand. We've all had bad gods. And the worst God in my life has been the food. I worshiped that crap for so many years. And today I'm so grateful to be free of it. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Christina J. from North Carolina. Next, we've got Katie G., followed by Reva P.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the meeting. This is Katie G. from Boston. And I think it's so interesting that it talks about that insanity begins before I take that first bite. And when I was early on in OA, I got really confused because I thought I was craving all the time. Like, I used the word obsession and craving simultaneously. And what I found out is that craving for me happens after I take the bite. So my husband and I might be together, and he might say, I crave a hot fudge sundae. Well, he goes and eats the hot fudge sundae to satisfy his craving, and it's over. So for me, I might obsess about something, and then that thought comes in, hot fudge sundae. I put it into my body, and I develop the phenomenon of craving. So my craving begins after. So what the heck is going on? And for me, the crux of my problem is my thinking, but I have to be careful. It's not my psychological processes. You know, sometimes I would get confused and think, oh, my thinking is because I was abused growing up, or my parents got divorced when I was little, or my mom had an affair, that thinking from a psychological standpoint would bring me down. And that's not my truth today. My truth today is that I have fears, right? So I might have a fear that I'm not good enough. And when I'm not connected to God and I have a fear that I'm not good enough, then everything around me is evidence that I'm not good enough. You might be having a bad day yourself, but if you look at me, it is absolute confirmation in my mind that I'm not good enough. Or if my husband doesn't call me on time, I tell myself the lie that I'm not good enough. And so what I have is really warped thinking. I don't process reality. It is pretty weird to think that if I got to a certain body weight, then all of my problems would disappear. The main problem of my mind, or is my mind, and it's not about applying, you know, medical drugs, although drugs have their place in recovery. I'm not saying that. It's an outside issue. But it is about uncovering, discovering, and discarding all of the faulty thinking I have. And that is why today, as a recovered woman, thanks be to God, I can have what my friend used to call second sober thoughts. So I might have that fear that I'm not good enough, but the second sober thought is, God is my source. With God, all things are possible. Or I may even, I'll just wrap with this, Crystal, I may even have that thought, food's going to fix it, but I'm connected to that second sober thought. I'm connected to the truth, which is that food and anorexia and bulimia is insane. And thanks be to God.
Great. Thanks, Katie. Sorry, I think your last few words got cut off, unfortunately. But thank you for sharing today, Katie G. from Boston. Next, we've got Reva P., followed by Fran Z.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. Crux, the most important point. It's telling it to me right here. I don't know that I really understood it when I read this, when I first came into program, but I certainly learned from experience, because I too, like so many, thought the food was the problem. And then when I put the food down, I saw the crux of the problem in my experience. I think for me, the disease was painful. I saw how I was doomed when the food was down. Like, I knew I was doomed when I was binging uncontrollably, yes. But I really thought that abstinence would make it all better. And I think I see the true nature, the crux of my problem in abstinence. When my sponsor was able to rewind in slow motion with me, the events, the thoughts, the delusional thoughts that precede the picking up. And to this day, you know, entire abstinence can take care of the physical allergy. But because I have the mental state that will take me back to the food that I'm allergic to, that's, I need power. I cannot do anything about that mental state. I need power. I get power through the steps. And I've heard so many people with long-term recovery, you know, the mental state can take me back to the bedevilments very, very quickly, very quickly. I have like almost like a Riva dictionary that twists everything, this disease of perception. So yeah, when I saw what was going on in my mind and my thinking, that I comes down to that spiritual disease, that's where I need to access power, develop a relationship with power, stay close to that power, don't let go of my higher power's hand, because my mind just, it's really like those lane things in the car, like it goes do 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 do. I go off the lane, and it happens so quickly. So thank you, God. By putting the food down and working the steps, I might have the first thought, but I do get the inspiration, you know, the true from the false, and I get the second thought, the God thought, so that I can live the way God would have me and not in that crazy, crazy mind place. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Riva P. from Toronto. Next, we've got Fran Z, followed by Claire E.
Good morning, everybody. Fran Z, recovered compulsive eater in Florida, formerly of New Jersey. And thank you, everyone, for your great shares. And, you know, I was looking at the beginning of the book where it says that it's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and it's written in italics. And, you know, we've heard that really listen up when they write it in italics. And but here they're telling me in this paragraph that it's more about the mind. Because the body, you know, if I'm allergic to peanuts or shellfish or cats, pretty much don't have too much trouble staying away from them. But even though I know I'm allergic to the first compulsive bite, my mind will always bring me back to it unless I have a psychic change, unless I work the steps with my recovered sponsor. So it only seems hopeless, but they're telling me the mind is more the problem than the body. And there, before I can seek a solution, I have to know I have a problem. And that's why this chapter is called More About Alcoholism, because they do want to educate us and we want to learn and believe that we have a problem before we could seek a solution. And we work the steps as quickly as we can with our recovered sponsor, because how long do we want to be tortured by this illness? You know, and we want freedom, we want peace, and we're not going to get it if we're chronic. If you're maybe the moderate or the hard, other things may work for you. You may not need a 12-step solution, but I am definitely the hardcore chronic. Without this program, without God working in my life, in every single area of my life, I'm going to be a mess. Toast. And with that, I pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Fran, from Florida. Next, we've got Claire E., followed by Nancy C.
Thank you, Crystal. Thank you to everybody doing service on the meeting. And my name's Claire E. I'm a recovered bulimic and compulsive eater in Cornwall in the UK.
I just love this meeting because it gets me to really micro-focus on sentences that I haven't previously taken notice of. And just reading this paragraph through, I mean, the experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful. Well, that would have been helpful if I could ever quit for a period of time, but that's not in my experience, really. In the height of my eating disorder, I remember not even being able to go 24 hours without binging and vomiting. I remember trying to white-knuckle my way through it and not getting there. And I think that was when I started to realise that I actually really did have a problem. I couldn't stop. I couldn't go 24 hours. So that was a helpful experiment in many ways because it outlined to me that I was out of my depth. And then, going on to sort of the mental states that precede. And I love that people have picked up on this word precede, because I have relapsed many times. And I'm very prone to being a gym. You know, suddenly the thought occurs to me to have a bit of food. But that's not true. When I look at it retrospectively, there was a lot of very bad thinking that was going on way before that food was picked up. And, you know, this is a cunning, baffling and powerful disease. I don't spot when I'm in it always. I really don't. You know, I only sort of had that vague sense of irritable, restless discontent. And of course, then my mind absolutely hones in as food giving me the source of ease and comfort. You know, that's what it knows. You know, it knows food gives me that anesthetic. So, you know, what I really need to do is be very attuned to the mental state, you know, the thinking. This is a mental problem. This is, as people said, a misperception, an attitude problem, where I get into resentment, I get into fear, I get into disconnection, I get into my defects of character. I get into that, oh, I don't really care, I'll be all right, I'll talk to somebody tomorrow, I'll tell my sponsor about it when I next speak to her. That sort of stuff, you know, goes on for me. And then sooner or later, the food is in my mouth. And it's only on retrospect, you can see it clearly on retrospect. It's only on retrospect I go, oh my goodness, I was doing that for days. I wasn't really attending meetings properly. I was doing something else when I was on them. I was irritable with people. I was taking other people's inventory. You know, all of those my system. And that is the crux of my problem. And I love the word crux, you know, the most important part of something which affects everything else. So if I neglect, you know, that mental part, if I sit in it, you know, it is inevitable that I will pick up food. And that is my step one these days. It's not that I'm, you know, don't eat. It is that I am absolutely going to eat if I'm in that mental state. And the only solution to that is to put my attention and time into my spiritual recovery. And then the mental stuff and the physical stuff tends to sort itself out. So very, very grateful for the meeting today. And I will pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire E. from the UK. Next, we've got Nancy C., followed by Roz G.
Hey, Crystal. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Nancy C., gratefully recovered this morning in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And boy, ditto. Wherever I am, there I go, right? I'm thinking this mental state, I have had a warped mental state my whole life, because I've had that delusion that I can control everything, that I'm different than everyone. And in this More About Alcoholism chapter, they give us very good examples of how just thwarted and delusional my thinking is about how I think I can control. I have to go to a power greater than me. The food isn't my problem, and they start talking about that, right? It is true. The thought comes way before the food. The food is just a byproduct of how I think. But when I start thinking I can control anything, I have finally learned in this program, I am powerless over everything. And when I get that delusion that this time it's going to be different, you know, the next couple of stories are all about how people had it. I've got this. I don't have to worry about this. And like somebody said before, those little thoughts that start, oh, I don't need to tell my sponsor that, you know, I didn't eat something I was supposed to, or I don't need to tell somebody that I didn't show up when I said I would. My spiritual principles, when they start to get pecked out, if I don't correct that immediately, I'm out the door before I even know, because the food then is a step up to where I'm thinking. When I came in, I didn't think I had a problem with my mental state. It was all about the food. Just let me get rid of the food and I'll be fine. Let me get abstinence and I'm fine. the food is the least of my problems today. It's not my problem. My problem is realizing I can't do anything on my own. I have to go to God. God is the one who will direct me. So when I can turn my life over every day and say, your times are my times, and live in a 24-hour-a-day mentality, not be in the past and not be in the future, I have a chance of following the directions in this book and staying happy, joyous, and free. That's the promise in the book, but I can only do it a day at a time, and I can only do it if I go to God for every little lurking notion that I have in my head. When I start getting those little lurking notions that start building up, all of a sudden I can be right out the door. I've done that once before, and God willing, I never will do that again. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Nancy C. from Michigan. Next, we've got Roz G., and then we'll take some more names.
Okay, good morning, and thank you for your service. My name's Roz G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California, which is Los Angeles County. I just want to say one thing about the sentence that says, the experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, and this is the one I like. But we think we can render an even greater service to the alcoholic sufferers and perhaps the medical fraternity. I thank the big book and the writers for having a service ethic and wanting to be of service to a person like me by telling me what my problem is and by telling me what the crux. And I know that I'm working the program when I can feel my feelings. I am a feeler. I know that the great Clancy Emerson said that, you know, we're feelers. Probably something else he said. But and my mother used to tell me, Rosalind, your feelings lie on the end of your nose. When I was a little girl, and I had no idea what that meant. And I didn't like it when she said that to me. Your feelings lie on the end of your nose, because I got so hurt and insulted by anything that she said to me that was a critique or a mother direction, and especially when I couldn't get the cookies out of the pantry that I wanted. That really pissed me off. One of the greatest gifts that abstinence from alcoholic foods has given me is the ability to feel. And yeah, I'm one of those feelers, and I can get angry, I can get resentful, I can get hurtful, I can feel fear very, very quickly. And if I don't do something about it, I will, you know, think of a food to bring me back into some kind of ease and comfort to fix that problem for you, to relieve me of that problem, and so. Later on, it's going to be really cool for the group to read about the different states of mind that happened before the relapse. But I just want to say that I am so thankful to this book and to the meeting and to people in meetings and to 10-step partners and all the people that I talk to that I can talk about my feelings to, because most of the time they're distorted. And when somebody with that's not emotionally involved on the other end of the line can help me see things from another point of view, it saves me. And I'm so grateful for that, because I feel all of my feelings today. And sometimes they're fantastic too. And the great and joyful feelings can also lead to the food. So I need to know my mental state. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roz G. from California. Before we continue, let me remind everyone where we're at. We're in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 34, the third paragraph. It begins with, how then shall we help our reader? And we're reading through that one paragraph, ending with, this is the crux of the problem, commenting on that one paragraph. I'll now take another set of names. If you haven't shared in the last few days, we'd love to hear from you. Who would like to share? I'm sorry, there's somebody who said their name and it just got a bit garbled up. Could you say your name again, please?
Jen A. sure I see.
Amy G.
Jen A.
Thank you. So far, I've got Jen A, Troy C, and Amy G. Is there anybody else who would like to share?
Ken W. H.
Ken. I can take a few more names if anyone
Victor
would like
B.
to.
Victor
I've got
B.
you, Victor.
Okay, this is my first time using this. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. Thank you for speaking up. Would anybody else like to share? I think I can take one or two more.
How do I unmute when it's time? Just.
It's you press star one.
Star one. And, okay, thank you. Okay.
Mute Anna. Perfect. All right, so I've got Jen A, Troy C, Amy G, Ken W. H., and Victor B. Anybody else before we get started? All right, so if I can everybody to please make sure you share your first name, initial of your last name, and your location so we can find you on the member list when you share. And if everybody could please press star one to mute your line, we'll get started with Jen A, followed by Troy C.
Good morning, Crystal. Thank you so much for taking the meeting, and thanks so much for Team Thursday and everybody's service. How are we going to help our readers determine? Well, let me just tell you, I didn't know I had a problem when I, you know, like I love hearing everybody share this morning. It's been really powerful. I didn't even know I had a problem with food. I just thought everybody was eating the way I was eating until it got to the point of 4 decades of thinking that everybody had, and then I'm like, well, wait a minute, you know, like my sister and I live in the same household. How come she's not gaining weight, you know, because she's eating food? What I didn't know is the things that I was eating were the sneaky side things, right? Like the box of cake mix at the top of the pantry. I would leave a spoon in it and I would go ravishing and eat half of it before my mom came home. Or the chocolate chips in the pantry, or even the box of Jell-O. Like, I would go to any lengths to, you know, get some ease and comfort from the day I had at school as a kid. But that didn't stop until I became an adult. And I think, you know, the experimentation that I think is for me was just the eating process, the continual eating and dieting and eating and dieting and eating and dieting. And I don't think it's till it got worse, right? I hear people say on the line, it's permanent, it's progressive, and it's fatal. You know, I even had a friend die of anorexia, and it still wasn't enough to see bags of vomit hidden all over her house to make me think, you too have a problem, Jennifer. You know, it's your own personal experimentation. So get out the looking glass, look at yourself, Jenna, and see what you can see. And I love how it was mentioned today, this big book, all the preambles, everything that's said in meetings, that's why they say the newcomer, keep coming back. And I'm here to say, if you're new, do. Keep coming back. Keep listening to the stories of people. Keep identifying in. That's what was part of the experimental process for me, is to hear that other people were as crazy in the food and the exercise and the pills and the potions as I was. I thought, wow, that's nuts. I didn't know there was anybody out there like me. I thought everybody was just normal, like my friends and my kids and my family and my sorority sister. No. And today I know that, you know, I have a problem. And then once I start that thinking, I'm drinking, or eating in this point, right? And the next thing I know, I'm out to the gym 7 days a week, 2 times a week, obsessing about it. Or maybe there's a new diet, or maybe there's a new Ozempic, or maybe there's a new this or that. So I have to constantly think to myself, okay, look at where you were, what happened to you, and what it's like. And I will tell you that I served God, I served the church, I served my community for 14 years in ministry. And you know what? I was kept asking myself, where are you, God? Where are you, God? And you know what? He was there the whole time. He's always been there for me. It's just I was so blocked off by the food. So get free from the food, get free from everything, and have a free life. How free do I want to be? I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks, Crystal.
Thank you, Jen A. from Colorado. Next, we've got Troy C., followed by Amy G.
Hey, thank you, moderator, for your service. Thanks for everybody who's doing service this morning. This is Troy C. from Florida, Eastern Time. Yeah, full disclosure, I recently committed to my sponsor to share every third day. So I'm kind of sharing just to claim my seat and hit that commitment. I don't know how structured my thoughts are, but this is obviously a really important section of the book because it's going to explain what my problem really is. You know, I was in a halfway house for another program for a number of years. And I remember, you know, the guy who was kind of the elder statesman there, or the guy who ran the facility, so to speak. And he would say, my problem wasn't that I couldn't stop. It's that I couldn't stop starting. And that explains my problem in that program. It explains my problem with food. You know, why is it that even knowing how great I feel when I'm dieting, I'm restricting, I'm losing all this weight, it seems to be going great. How can I convince myself it's okay to have some Costco pizza, even though I've seen what happened over and over and over again? You know, how come a month into ketosis and everything's going great with that diet? How do I convince myself that it's okay to eat an entire loaf of French bread? You know, and this book is going to explain in masterly detail that I have this curious mental twist that even knowing the consequences, even knowing what I stand to lose, I'm not going to be able to raise a defense. I'm not going to be able to pull into memory with sufficient force what happened last time. And that's the crux of my problem. You know, it's bad. It's bad news that when I start eating, I have a very hard time stopping, but I can stop. I can put together brief periods of sobriety. But the crux of the problem is that they're always followed by a still worse relapse, that I can't stay stopped, and that when I start again, it's going to progress, it's going to get worse, and it's eventually going to kill me. And what the book is going to explain is that my only hope here is the power from a higher power from something outside of myself. It ends up being good news, but it's after a whole lot of bad news. And I really have to see this, and I have to convince myself that this is the case to propel me to pursue that relationship with power. The reason that I have to become convinced that, oh my gosh, I can't prevent myself from starting again, that knowledge is not going to keep me away from food. I already knew that. I saw my eating in an alcoholic light for a decade of sobriety in AA before I came here to get sober with food. So knowing this about myself, knowing how my alcoholism mapped onto it, that did not help. The only thing that's going to help me is pursuing a relationship with power. That's it. I pass.
Thank you, Troy C. from Florida. Next, we've got Amy G., followed by Ken W. H.
Good morning. Thank you so much, everyone, for such an awesome meeting. I've got so many thoughts running through my head. Ditto, ditto, ditto. But I believe, for me, the crux of the problem is that I can't fix me, and the mental state is complete insanity. I mean, talking about rationalization and how we convince ourselves that the insane is somehow sane, rationalize, a ration of lies. You know, we talked about yesterday about baffling. That I looked it up in the dictionary. You know, it's incredibly confusing and difficult to understand, because I may have had control over my eating at some point. I may have been able to stay on a diet at some point, but there was a point where I crossed over the line. Don't know when, don't care about it, not looking back, not interested in researching that one. But at some point, I crossed the line into a real compulsive overeater. And when that happens, my thinking, my mental state is one of insanity. As a matter of fact, it's worse than insanity. It's a liability, because my thinking somehow twists in a way that convinces me that the insane is somehow sane. I mean, sticking my finger down my throat 10 times a day, how do we rationalize that? Well, that's how sick I am. That's how sick I am. And that's not to beat myself up, but it's to understand that in a world where it says self-help, self-will, and intellect is king, that's not the world I can live in. without going insane with compulsive eating and any other mood altering substance. I need a power greater than myself, and to access that power, because I can't do it and my thinking will make me think that I can, I need access to a power and a personality change that only comes from me with the transformative power of putting the food down and working these 12 steps that allows me access to my God. I need a power greater than myself. I was laughing the other day because, you know, I was accused of going to those meetings. Are you still going to those meetings? Aren't they brainwashing you? And I was like, thank God, yes, please. May they continue to brainwash me, because I need to continually remember that of myself, I cannot fix myself. I didn't have trouble eating. I had trouble living in my skin sober. That's why in the doc op it says we're restless, irritable, and discontent until we can again sense the ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a drink or a bite. That's how I live my life, without the power of God through these 12 steps. So yes, please continue to brainwash me, because without that, I will try to use my self-will and my power to convince me it's okay to take that bite. Everyone's made it very clear that the first bite is the end of the relapse because of the mental twist that comes before. The mental obsession drives me there, and the physical allergy keeps me there in a vicious, torturous cycle of compulsive eating. Don't want to live that way anymore. Praise God, I don't have to. To the newcomer, we have a common solution upon which we can absolutely join in brotherly and harmonious action. Together, we do what we could never do alone with God's help through these 12 steps. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Amy G. from Maryland. Next, we've got Ken W.H., followed by Victor B.
Thank you, Crystal. This is Ken W.H. in Recovered Compulsive Eater in North Carolina. The best service I can offer is to tell my story, and discussing the mental state or lack thereof preceding the first compulsive bite. And, you know, after the first compulsive bite, I would always ask myself, you know, what was I thinking? And often it was nothing, or I was just thinking about myself. I needed to transfer that question to before the first bite, transfer the question to what am I thinking, and where am I? You know, it seems that the stories that I hear all seem to have this what I call a suddenly moment in them, that moment when an actual sane thought precedes the second thought. The stories we're going to hear talk about the suddenly that comes that's insane. But this book and the second step are telling me that I can have a sane first thought. But that sanity, and the only way that thought can be sane, is that a higher power has provided a way to have a sane thought. And for me, that sane thought is to simply stop. And instead of saying, suddenly the thought crossed my mind, I need to say, suddenly God. And let that be my first second thought, so to speak, before, as my hand approaches or I'm thinking about, I'm in front of an addictive substance, is suddenly God. And if I do that, I have half a chance of the same thought preceding the first bite rather than coming after. So that's all I have to share today. Thanks. Pass.
Thank you, Kent W.H. from North Carolina. And next we've got Victor B.
Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Victor B. I'm calling in from Buffalo, New York, Western New York, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And this is really great meeting my first time on here. Been invited by a couple people. I this last trip around, when I left Overeaters Anonymous and came back, wasn't any longer because of vanity or wanting to look good in jeans or lose weight to go on the beach or a pool party or something. It was because I was walking up a staircase and I couldn't breathe from so much binging and so much weight on me, and I had stopped in the middle of the staircase. And I think I really appreciate the whole idea that, you know, convincing myself that once I pick up, I can't stop. Once I eat certain foods and sugar, flour, whatever it is for me, once I start, I can't stop. And the gentleman had said my real problem, I just couldn't get wrap my head around, was I couldn't stop starting. With all the knowledge that I'll blow up my life again picking up food and eat myself into oblivion, all that knowledge doesn't help. And what happened with me with this whole thinking thing is I stopped trying to talk myself out of compulsively eating. I was doing it so long. And here's what happened to me the last trip was I found out that the disease was using a half-truth to keep me in bondage. And that was, I got to stop eating like this. I got to stop. What's wrong with me? I got to stop eating like this. And it's a half-truth, but it's a full lie because it's not the true picture. Because when I got free actually, this is radical, when I stopped trying to stop. You know, that doesn't even make sense to the self-reliant. But I found out, I realized I had this intervention on the staircase that the idea that I got to stop compulsively eating like this was a disease-infused message based in self-reliance, that I was like, I had this vision of the disease smiling down on me going, just keep him right there. He still doesn't get it. I got to stop eating like this. Keep him right there. He'll stay stuck. He'll never get it. And the truth of the matter is, when I stopped trying to stop and I realized I don't got to stop eating like this, I have to have this merciless obsession removed. And that's when I've removed my obsession of compulsive eating. I've been able to follow a food plan, sugar and flour free, and I'm breathing better, feeling better, walking better. And the last thing I used to do was try to talk myself out of a temptation, like, oh, I felt like eating. No, I better not think that way. And what would happen was I would keep brushing off the thoughts. I shouldn't be thinking that way. And what that was doing was dependent on self-knowledge again to talk me out of it. So I don't depend on self-knowledge. I have to ask every time a thought comes for God to remove the thought immediately. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Victor B. from Buffalo, for sharing. We do have time for one more share. Is there anybody who'd like to share today? Anyone who'd like to do a quick 2-minute share for us?
This is Nicole.
Perfect. Thank you, Nicole.
Right,
go
David,
ahead. Thanks so
Hi.
Much, David. I hope you can share on the next hour. Nicole, if you could give us your initial of your last name and location, please go ahead and share.
Hi, this is Nicole S. From Colorado. And thank you for your service. This is such a good reminder for me because it's the crux of my problem is my thinking. And so I know my crazy thinking, I have to constantly act differently than what my crazy thinking is leading me towards. And I'm so grateful just for these steps and just knowing I'm powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. I'm powerless over my thinking. My thinking is unmanageable. And, God can restore me to sanity and can give me right thinking if I come to Him for it. And I'm so grateful for the 10th step also, that I can bring these crazy thoughts on all this emotional baggage that comes up throughout the day, and I can bring it to God, and I can have fellows in the program that can help me to spot my crazy thinking when I'm in that state, because precedes that relapse, and I don't ever want to go back there. I'm so grateful for recovery, and this program is a lot of work,
okay.
And but it's so worth it. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Nicole S. from Colorado, for taking us out. That's all the time we have for sharing. Thank you to everyone who shared and to Team Thursday for your service this month. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Thursday, July 25th, 2024, is 21603-21603. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Riva P. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only, through to keep you until then.
Yes, hi, Riva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.